sit and close her eyes and use her imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, it's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on is the intrigue of suspense with The Locked Room. But first, on the lighter side, let's experience The Life of Riley. The Life of Riley was first heard on NBC in the summer of 1943. Chester A. Riley, radio's riveter and resident hardhat, might have been the Archie Bunker of the 1940s. William Bendix was just about perfect as Riley. A leaking roof, problems at the plant, or the manifestation of kids' growing pains were enough to send Chester A. Riley into pandemonium. Through it all, wife Peg tried to remain level-headed and understanding, but even she sometimes lost her cool before the 30 minutes was up. In 1945, Riley moved to Saturday night for NBC. The program continued there until 1951 as a Friday night show. Like Ozzie and Harriet, The Life of Riley was virtually unscathed by the arrival of television. It made the transition easily, with Bendix carrying on as ever after the initial shows had featured Jackie Gleason as Riley. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with The Life of Riley and Riley the TV Actor from March of 1950. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. To those who are interested in facts and figures, statistics show that 9 out of 10 married men lie to their wives. The 10th man is a widower. And so tonight, let's not be dismayed to discover that Chester A. Riley has lived up to statistical expectations.
Hi, Mom. Is Pop home yet?
No, dear. He's working overtime tonight.
That's what he says.
What do you mean?
I just saw him on television.
What?
Yeah, I was watching the wrestling match in the television store in Crenshaw. And all of a sudden, there's Pop in the audience.
But that's impossible. He said he's working tonight at the plant.
But I saw him, just as clear as anything.
Why, you must have been mistaken. Hello? Oh, no, he didn't come home yet, Mr. Gillis. No, he's working late tonight. What? You did? You sure it was Riley you saw? Oh, now, it couldn't have been. He told me he had to work, and he wouldn't lie to me. Goodbye. Wait till I get my hands on that man.
I told you it was Pop.
Hi. Guess who I just saw on television?
You saw him, too? Oh, you know?
Yeah, I saw him, too.
Well, I thought Daddy was working tonight.
No, we live and learn.
Well, why should he tell a fib?
Shh. I think I hear him. Now, listen, children. Don't you kids say anything.
Oh. Hiya, kids. Everybody still up?
Hello, dear.
Oh, gee, I'm bushed. I had an awful tough night at the plant. Peg, honey, would you get up and let me lie down on the couch a minute? I'm really beat.
Why, certainly, sweetheart.
Oh, this feels good.
You poor dear.
I may have to work again next Friday. Maybe every Friday.
I hate to see you working so hard, darling.
Oh, I don't mind doing it for my family. We'll need the extra money if we're going to take that vacation trip in Yosemite this summer.
Mm. You really had a hard night, dearest?
Oh, yeah, it was murder.
Who won?
Gorgeous George. Boy, you should have seen how... You want the couch, Peg?
Chester Riley.
Now, wait a minute, Peg. Before you start accusing an innocent man of lying, just tell me one thing. How did you find out?
Chester Riley? Answer me.
No, I didn't mean to lie, Peg. Honest, I went to the plant and the job wasn't ready and this guy had a couple of passes.
Well, why didn't you phone and let me know?
Well, I was going to phone, only I was afraid you wouldn't let me go.
Why shouldn't I? You're over 21. You're entitled to go to a wrestling match. Why should I object?
Gee, I had you all wrong, Dumplin'. Can I go next Friday?
No.
Why not? I'll still be over 21. Why can't I go?
Because of what you did tonight.
How did you find out anyway?
I saw you on television.
Me too.
Television. I always said no good would come of that invention.
You look great, Pa.
When I did?
Yeah, I saw you real close.
Yeah? What was I doing?
You were talking to that blonde next to you.
Shut up. Peg, honest, I was just asking her for her phone number. I mean the right time. He's got me all mixed up.
I got the surprise of my life when I saw you, Daddy.
Yeah, where were you?
Over at Margie's house. You look wonderful.
I did, huh?
All the girls said you look positively handsome.
Did they? Yeah, you hear that, Peg?
Oh, don't get excited. After those ugly wrestlers, anybody'd look good.
Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you... Hello? Oh, hello, Mrs. Morris. Yeah, that was me. That was me. You really think so? Oh, go on. You're just saying that. Well, of course, I didn't have any makeup on. Yeah, well, maybe I will. Thanks for calling. Goodbye. It was Mrs. Morris. She said I should go on television. As an actor, she means.
Oh, she was kidding you.
What do you mean? She said I look very natural.
Of course you look natural. You didn't know the camera was on you and you weren't doing anything.
I was so. I was flirting with that blonde, wasn't I? I mean, I was talking to her. Hey, listen to this in the paper. Actors wanted for television at once. Now casting major production. You too can be a star. No experience necessary. Apply for interview and audition at Stardust Television Productions. Well, what do you think of that?
Well, what about it?
It might be a good idea for somebody to look into.
Who?
Me. Who else?
Oh, Daddy, are you
an actor, Pa?
Well, what's the big joke? I always felt that I had talent for acting. And what about all those people that phoned yesterday? We must have gotten 10 calls.
Oh.
Everybody said I looked very natural.
But they were ribbing you. Don't be ridiculous.
Well, I don't see what's so ridiculous. After all, where are the television stars of the future going to come from? Unknowns like me?
At your age. Well,
so what? Who knows? Maybe I'll turn out to be the Ezio Pinscher of television. Come enchanted evening.
Oh. Now, look, Riley. You put all this acting nonsense out of your head, or I'm...
Okay. No harm in talking about it. Hey, I'm late. Goodbye.
Wait a minute.
What?
Here.
Well, what's that?
$50. The vacation money.
Boy, have we got as much as that?
Mm-hmm. And if we keep on saving the way we have, there'll be more than enough by summer. Now, here, Riley. On your lunch hour, make a deposit in the bank.
Why don't you just leave it in the bowl in the cupboard?
It's too much money to leave lying around the house. It isn't safe.
Oh, who's going to break into our house?
I'm not worried about somebody breaking in. I'm thinking about an inside job.
Well, don't be silly, Peg. Junior wouldn't... Oh. Well, that's a fine attitude.
Stardust Productions. Oh, it's you, Bill. Yeah? Yeah? You sure? Okay, thanks for the tip.
What's up, Gilbert?
The DA's office is on to us.
I'd figured to happen sooner or later.
Those stories in the Daily News finished us. We better blow town.
Too bad we can't milk a few more suckers.
Too risky. We better leave tonight. Start packing.
And what do we do with all those screen tests we made of the jerks?
Leave them here. What good are they? Come on, let's get moving.
Good morning. Is this the Stardust Productions?
Yes. What can I do for you?
Well, I read your ad about actors.
Sorry, no more casting.
Oh, I thought maybe no more parts.
No, sorry, you had to come down all the way down here.
Oh, well, that's okay. I was passing by anyway on my way to the bank to make a deposit. Goodbye.
Hold it, mister.
Huh?
Say that again.
Goodbye.
No. What you said before that?
Huh? Oh, I said I was just passing by on my way to the bank to make a deposit.
Remarkable. Joseph, have you ever heard a voice with such resonance? Such timbre?
Never. Come over here to the light, mister.
Riley. Riley.
Turn around.
Hmm?
Remarkable. Gilbert, have you ever seen such a face before?
Never. And I never expect to again. It's one in a million, the perfect TV face.
Well, everybody's been telling me that I look very natural.
You come to us a few days ago, sir, before all the parts were cast.
Yeah, well, maybe in your next production.
Wait a minute. By George, we'll write a part in for you.
You will? Honest? Well, gee, I can't believe it. When do I start?
Tomorrow morning. Of course, it depends on whether we okay your test.
Test?
Yes, to give us an idea how you look on the screen. All the big TV stars have to take a test.
Oh, well, sure, I understand. I ain't worried. I'll pass. When do I take it?
Right now, if you can pay the test fee.
Oh, there's a fee.
Oh, naturally. Expenses involved, cameraman, makeup, lighting, processing, film, you understand.
Oh, sure, sure. How much will it be?
Around 100?
100?
Of course, if you're not interested.
Oh, no, I am. But all I got is 50 bucks.
50, eh? Riley, to help give the world your face, we'll cut it in half. $50 will be quite all right.
Oh, gee. Thanks. Only I ain't handing over any dough until I get a contract. I wasn't born yesterday.
Joseph, get a contract.
Here.
There you are. Sign right here.
Well, I see that I'm dealing with businessmen. Here's the 50. Where do I sign?
Right here.
Fine. All right, Joe, get the camera set up for Riley's test.
Right.
Now, Mr. Riley, here's the scene I want you to study for the test. And as soon as Joe's got the camera set up, we'll be ready to shoot.
Oh, thanks.
Don't be nervous.
Oh, I won't. This part here, this is only words, dialogue. Well, what about the actions? Are you going to show me the movements?
Oh, you mean the business?
Yeah.
Don't worry. Before we're through with you, we'll give you the business.
Oh, that's wonderful. I can hardly wait.
Pabst Blue Ribbon will bring you the second act of The Life of Riley in just a moment.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley with Paula Winslow and John Brown.
Peg! Peg!
Oh, hello, Riley.
Peg, my darling, kiss me.
Riley!
Put your arms around me and hold me tight.
Riley.
I adore you.
Oh, well, you haven't kissed me like that in years.
Well, I didn't mean it. I was just acting.
What?
Oh, boy, have I got news for you. Babs, Junior, come in here. Boy, have I got news.
You got a raise.
A raise? That's chicken feed. We're going to be rich and famous.
What's up, Pop?
That's all the excitement.
You are now looking at one of the future stars of television.
You, Pop?
You, Daddy? What are you talking about?
I mean it. In a couple of months, I'll be right up there with all the great stars. Hopalong Cassidy, Cyclone Malone, Time for Bernie.
Riley, what's this all about?
I just signed up to star in a television production, The Stardust Review.
You what?
You're kidding, Pop.
You're going to act?
Oh, you don't believe me, huh? Well, laugh this off my contract. There you are.
You've got a contract?
Well, certainly. I insisted. I wanted to be sure that this is no racket. I start at $200 a week.
$200?
Oh, impossible. Are you sure it isn't a swindle of some kind?
How can it be a swindle? I got a contract, ain't I? I'm protected by law. Ain't it wonderful?
Oh, there's something wrong somewhere.
Well, that's a fine attitude. Here I get the big break of my life. And instead of encouraging me like any other wife would, you knock me. No wonder there's so many divorces in Hollywood. Mental cruelty, that's what it is. Go on, why don't you tell Luella Parsons about me?
I didn't mean to knock, dear, but it's such a shock. I find it hard to believe.
Well, you better get used to the idea that your husband's going to be a big star on television. But Dumplin', will you stop worrying? In a few months, you'll tune in on our television, and what do you see? Cuckoo, Fran, and Riley. Hurry up, Peggy. I don't want to be late. Can't afford to hold up production.
Oh, where is this place?
It's right in here. Come on, hurry up.
Now, are you sure they'll let us on the set?
Of course. After all, I'm the star.
Well, look at all these people.
Yeah, probably my extras. Come on. Excuse me. One side, please. Step aside.
Who are you shoving, Mac? Who do you think you are?
My good man, I happen to be the star of this here production. Step aside.
You're the star? Are you kidding? I'm the star.
Oh, no, you're quite wrong.
You see? Tell him, lady.
I'm the star.
I'm the star, too. I'm going to sing. Me old train. Ha, ha. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop. Over hell and
quiet.
Plain.
Quiet. I'm the star. I got a contract here. Well, I'm the star here. Shut up.
Clippity-clop.
Your attention, please. What? Quiet, please. Quiet. Folks, I'm from the district attorney's office. The men who ran this business have skipped town. They're fakes, and there's a warrant out for their arrest. Now, we may need you as witnesses, so please leave your name and address with my assistant before you leave.
Peg, where are you?
I'm right here, dear.
Take me home.
Grandma, ain't I gonna be on television?
No, darling. We are going home.
I want to be a television star!
So do I!
Oh, come on, Riley. Snap out of it.
I don't understand. I just don't understand. They look so honest. They gave me a test and all.
Now, look, be sensible. After all, it isn't the end of the world.
Oh, it could have been worse, Daddy.
No, not the way I feel now.
You're lucky you found out in time before it cost you any money.
Peg.
Riley.
Well,
you didn't.
Yeah.
You didn't give him money.
Yeah.
You couldn't have been that foolish.
Well, you don't know me like I do.
How much? How much did you give him?
Only $50. It was...
$50?
$50?
Yeah. Oh, gee, Pop.
Where did you get $50? Where did you get it?
Peg, what do you say this summer we go to Ocean Park?
Huh? The vacation money?
Oh, no, Daddy, you couldn't have.
Well, not the Yosemite money.
You took every cent we saved for the last 6 months. The children chipped in nickels and dimes out of their allowance. You took that money and gave it to a couple of crooks. When you knew that for years we've been dreaming about going to Yosemite.
I know, but what's so wonderful about Yosemite? I mean, take away the mountains and the trees, stick in an ocean and some smog, and you got Ocean Park.
I'll never forgive you for this, Riley. Never.
No, Peg.
Don't speak to me.
No, Peg, wait a minute. Bebsy, darling, Bebs. Junior, my boy, you understand. Oh, what's the use? What's the use of going on? I ought to shoot myself. Who's there?
It is I, Digby Odell, the friendly undertaker.
All I need now is a gun.
Something wrong, Riley?
Oh, Digger, I'm in an awful mess. I got taken in on a television racket.
You should have consulted me. I know all about TV. I sponsor a television show.
You do?
Oh, yes. You've heard of Life Can Be Beautiful?
Yes.
My show is called A Date with Digger. The story of a struggling young undertaker who began at the top and worked his way down.
Well, I got to take a look at your TV show. Is it one of them kinescopes?
Oh, no, 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 Phil. If you'll excuse the expression, we do it live.
Digger, do you think television is here to stay?
Oh, yes, but not the shows that are on it.
I was sucker enough to think I could be an actor.
Why not? It's all a matter of coaching you to be natural. Most amateurs are too stiff. But I can take anyone, no matter how stiff he is, and make him unbend.
I got took in by a couple of crooked producers. They swindled me out of 50 bucks.
Oh, why didn't you come to me? I know all about these talent rackets.
Well, it's too late now. I always come to you when it's too late to do anything about it.
Most people do.
Peg will never forgive me. It was our vacation, though. Hello?
Mr. Chester Riley?
Speaking.
My name is Conrad. I'm with Acme Television Productions. We understand you made a TV test for Stardust Productions, and we're interested...
Well, I ain't. I had enough of television. I ain't gonna be gypped again. I've been taken for my last ride.
Don't be too sure of that.
Mr. Riley, you don't understand. We want to buy that test.
No. Huh? You saw it?
Oh, yes. We got it from the district attorney's office. It's just what we need for our program.
You mean that you want to use it on television?
Yes, and we'll pay you $100.
$100?
Yes, you see, the type of program we
Well,
have...
I don't care what kind of program, as long as it's on the level.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll send a messenger over immediately with a contract and a check.
Look, you better make it cash. It's no deal unless you send cash.
Well, all right, Mr. Riley.
Yeah, well, that's... Hey, wait, when's the show?
Tonight at 9, Channel 4.
Oh, swell. Thanks. Thanks for everything. Digger, congratulate me. I just got a new lease on life.
And you want me to congratulate you?
Wait till I tell you what happened. You see...
Yelling about.
Oh, Peg, the most wonderful thing. I'm going to be on television after all.
Oh, Riley, now I'm warning you.
Wait a minute, will you? Let me tell you, this time it's on the level. They're using my test. They're going to pay me $100. The messenger's on his way. You'll see me on television tonight.
I don't believe it.
Well, ask Digger. He heard, ain't it true, Digger?
So I gather.
Peg, call everybody up, all our friends. Tell them to come over tonight and watch me. Everybody we know.
Riley. Riley. We haven't got a cent.
Yeah, that's right. We'll get one on approval just for tonight, and then we can send it back. Eh?
Can you do that?
Oh, sure. They send it over to your house, you keep it for 10 days, and you send it back.
Very interesting plan, but it would never work in my business.
Hey, get on the phone and start calling. Tell everybody that tonight a star is born.
Believe it. I just don't believe it.
What do you mean, Gillis, you don't believe it? Here's the dough I got. Look, 100 smackers.
Maybe I'm crazy. I guess on television anything goes.
Is that so? Wait till you see me act.
Daddy, it's 9 o'clock.
Yeah, well, hurry up. Tune in the set. Channel 4. We don't want to miss the beginning. Quiet, everybody.
Quiet.
Friends, I just want to say that I appreciate you all coming over here tonight to be with me and congratulate me on my success. This means a whole new future. And I just want to say that no matter how high up the ladder I may climb, I'll never forget the less fortunate ones I left below me. And that goes for my wife and kids. I mean, I won't be...
speech-making already. Let's watch the television.
Daddy,
I think I've got it.
Yeah, well, quiet, everybody. Oh, gee, I'm nervous.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, we bring you our regular weekly feature... There's one born every minute.
What kind of a program is that? What's that mean, there's one born every minute?
Well, it must mean a star is born. Sure, that's it, a star is born. You're stupid, Gillis.
Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we have a program of special interest to residents of Los Angeles. We are going to show you a screen test that was made the other day. A scene from Romeo and Juliet. And the part of Romeo was performed by an unknown actor, Chester A. Riley.
That's me. Did you hear that? Chester Riley?
We present this scene without any further comment for the moment.
There I am. You see me? That's me. You see me?
Holy smoke, you're wearing your long underwear.
Those are tights. You see, I'm going over to the balcony now.
Yeah, we got eyes.
Juliet's inside. Here's where I talk. Quiet. Shh, no talking.
I hope you ain't gonna climb no balcony in them tights.
But soft, what light through yonder window breaks? It is the east, and Juliet is the sun. Arise, fair sun, and kill the envious moon, who is already sick and pale with grief, that thou, her maid, are far more fair than she. Be not her maid, since she is envious. Her vestal livery is but sick and green, and none but fools do wear it. Cast it off. It is my lady. Oh, it is my love.
Don't let this happen to you. This is the first time the man you just saw, Chester Riley, has ever acted in his life. And having seen him, I'm sure you'll agree it should also be the last.
No.
Chester
no.
Riley was victimized by unscrupulous talent racketeers who led him to believe he was destined for stardom and then proceeded to swindle him out of $50.
Turn it off.
To
Turn
the
it
citizens
off.
Of this city,
Stop
we
him.
Say,
Turn
beware
off.
Of these dishonest talent
Give me an axe. I'll
who pay on the gullible aspirants for movie and
I'll
television
pulverize
fame.
It. I'll smash
Don't
it.
Don't be a Chester Riley. There's one born every minute.
In just a moment, Riley will return.
Shall I get you another compress, Riley?
No, it'll be all right. Oh, my head. Where is everybody?
They went home, dear.
I guess they were all laughing at me.
Oh, what do you care?
Peg, why do you put up with me? I'm no good. I don't make a good living. I lie to you. I'm always making trouble for you, embarrassing you. Why do you stick? What is there about me that made you put up with me all these years?
Can't you guess?
Well, yeah, I know, but looks ain't everything. Folks, this is Riley, alias William Bendix. Right now, the Red Cross is launching one of the greatest peacetime programs in its fine history. Program that will require $67 million to see it through. And so the Red Cross is asking for our help. After all, it is your contribution in time and money that makes the Red Cross possible. So let's give generously. Remember, all may help through the Red Cross. Thank you. Good night.
Pabst Blue Ribbon invites you to join us again next week to hear The Life of Riley, starring William Bendix as Riley. The Life of Riley is produced by Irving Brecker by arrangement with Universal International Pictures, now releasing Francis, starring Donald O'Connor and Francis the Talking Mule. Tonight's script is by Alan Lipscott and Reuben Schiff. Music by Lou Kozlov. Mrs. Riley is Paula Winslow. Digger Odell is John Brown. Babs is Barbara Eiler. Junior is Bobby Ellis. And others in the cast were Alan Reed, Ann Whitfield, Sid Tomac, and Eleanor Audley. Consult your local paper for the correct time of The Life of Riley show on television over NBC each week. The Life of Riley is brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Newark, New Jersey, and Peoria, Illinois, and sent your way with the best wishes of Pabst Blue Ribbon dealers from coast to coast. Jimmy Wallington speaks.
From March of 1950, it's been The Life of Riley with Riley the TV actor. In a moment, it's Suspense and the Locked Room as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Radio, remember radio.
If you have a favorite show or serial you'd like to hear on an upcoming edition of Radio Yesteryear, let us know. Email requests at radioyesteryear.org. That's requests at radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's so-called outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in 1942. The program was on the air for the next 20 years under many talented directors. Each brought his own mark to suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based programs on the air. Suspense was known as an actor's theater. Actors such as Cary Grant, Frederick March, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Gregory Peck, Peter Lorre, Henry Fonda, and even Orson Welles headed the casts. Joseph Kearns, the grim-voiced fellow known as the Man in Black, came on board the first year as narrator. He continued through the Roma Wine years with Truman Bradley, another of radio's most distinguished voices, doing the commercials. The Man in Black had disappeared by the time the program moved to 60 Minutes in 1948. The program continued on CBS through the late 1950s. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Suspense and The Locked Room from January of 1944. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Suspense. This is the Man in Black to introduce this weekly half hour of Suspense. Tonight, two of Hollywood's favorite screen stars, Miss Virginia Bruce and Mr. Alan Jocelyn, with the noted character actor George Zucco. Our suspense play, which is produced and directed by William Spear, presents a rather neat problem. That of a crime committed while no criminal was present. And so with a locked room and with the performance of Virginia Bruce as an exceedingly bright young lady named Iris Lane, of Alan Jocelyn as an exceedingly shy young man named Harold Mills, and of George Zucco as the exceedingly polished Dr. Woodhull, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Hello, Mrs. Eaton's residence. Who's calling? No, Mrs. Eaton is not in. No, there will not be any statement for the papers. Carol, will you get that? Hello, no, I can't tell you anything about
Eaton's
it.
Residence.
No.
No, there will be absolutely no statement.
Here we go again.
If you wish, only you are wasting
Eaton's
your
residence.
Time.
Look, I told you this morning there wouldn't be any statement for the newspapers. No, not tomorrow either.
Dear.
I'm sorry, I'm awfully busy right now. I said I was busy. Busy. Phew, what a day.
It's rather disturbing how quickly the reporters got wind of it. I do hope no harm has been done.
Well, we did our best. It's too big a deal to keep secret anyway. There are always rumors, and it's the business of newspapers to pick up rumors.
Dear me, I wonder how he's going to take it.
The old man? He probably won't be tickled pink. You know how he is.
I know I'll be relieved when he has it on the lock and key, my word. Oh, good evening, Mr. Stephen.
Evening, Harold. Wayne, you two still working?
No, we thought we'd stick around till you got here.
I'm sorry I was so late.
The newspapers have been calling, Mr. Stephen.
The newspapers? How in blazes
we
did
told
they...
them there wouldn't be any statement.
Oh, I should hope not. How do you suppose...
Then it's not finished?
Oh, no, the deal's closed. Have it with me, as a matter of fact.
With you, sir?
You've been carrying it around in your pocket?
You see why I don't feel so good about the newspapers. But at least I got it home all right. Like to see it?
Oh, yes.
Doesn't look like much wrapped up like this. Well, there it is.
Oh,
like it?
The lapella diamond.
What a beauty.
It's enormous.
Yes. But tomorrow we start to cut it. And within a year, it'll be just so many engagement rings.
You know, I hate to see it changed. It's so beautiful the way it is.
Oh, there's no money in it for me this way.
Oh, Dr. Woodhull called. He wants to give you a checkup if he can catch it before dinner.
No, Dr. Woodhull, an old woman. Treats me like an invalid. Oh, well. Anything else?
Nothing important. Oh, Harold, will you answer?
Yes, certainly. Mr. Seaton's residence. Who's calling, please? Just a moment. Mr. Van Houten.
Van Houten?
Yes, sir.
Oh, tell him I'm out of town.
Mr. Van Houten, Mr. Seaton's out of town. Well, dear me, you can think what you like if Mr. Seaton is not here. Goodbye.
Well, odd. What'd he say?
He said he has information that you are here. And he insists on coming up here now. He sounds most disagreeable.
Well, I don't think he's likely to show up, but if he does, don't let him in.
All right, Mr. Seaton.
I'll be in my study until Woodhull gets here.
But don't forget your medicine, Mr. Seaton. I put it right beside the seltzer bottle.
Oh, I won't forget.
I hope Dr. Woodhull hurries. I'm dead.
I'm sure you must be. Mr. Seaton seemed awfully proud of his new stone, didn't he?
I thought he was cool as a cucumber. How would you feel if you just bought the biggest diamond in the world?
Oh, the second biggest, I believe, Iris. Not that that's anything to do with.
What do you suppose he paid for it?
I understand the price was something under $1 million, but he expects to get back over $1.5 million once it's cut and polished.
Harold, putting that kind of money into a piece of stone, I know if I had $1 million, I'd never buy diamonds.
Dear me, for that matter, neither would I. But for some people, diamonds take the place of other things. Power, love. What would you do if you had $1 million?
I don't know. There are a lot of slow people I'd like to help out. And I'd like to travel. Oh, there are lots of things. What would you do?
You really want to know?
Of course I do.
I don't think I should say this, but if I had $1 million or even much less, I'd ask you to marry me.
Why, Harold...
No, please, I don't want you to say anything. You don't have to. I know I'm not the sort for you, really. I'm not like Dr. Woodhull, you know, sure of myself.
Well, it's not that, Harold. Honestly, it's just that you never said anything before. You never even... What was that?
It sounded as if it came from the study. Mr. Seaton? Mr. Seaton, is anything wrong?
He doesn't answer.
Mr. Seaton!
The door's locked.
Yes, have you looked in the iris?
Right here.
Mr. Seaton! Mr. Seaton? Why, where is he?
There he is on the floor. What happened to him? Is it...
Wait, I'll see. Oh, goodness.
What put him on the couch.
Just a minute, Iris. I don't think you'd better look. He's badly injured.
Injured? But how?
Get his head. Get a doctor, will you?
A doctor?
Someone's tried to kill him. Hurry.
To kill him? All right.
Try Dr. Woodall. Maybe he hasn't left.
I will. Operator, get me Granite 6-9700.
Yes. Good evening, Iris.
Oh, Dr. Woodall. Never mind, operator. Come on, doctor. I was just calling you.
Is something wrong?
He's hurt. Someone tried to... Harold, Dr. Woodall was just coming in.
Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad you're here, doctor.
What's the matter with Seaton?
I think someone tried to kill him. It's his head. You can see the blood. I found this under him.
What's that?
It seems to be a piece of broom handle filled with lead. Evidently, he was struck with it.
Concussion. Not this. Still some pulse. I just hand me my bag.
Here you are.
And you'd better call the police.
The police?
Certainly. This is attempted murder.
Oh, dear.
Good evening. Did I hear somebody say murder?
Who are you?
My name is Van Houten. I telephoned a little while ago.
How did you get in?
Well, I rang, no one answered, so I walked in. I wish to speak with Mr. Seaton, but I see that perhaps I'm a little too late. Eh?
Perhaps you knew you'd be a little too late, Mr. Van Houten.
Harold, I think we'd better leave that to the police. Did you call them?
I can't figure out how it happened. Harold, you and I have been outside that door all day. I know there wasn't anyone in this room.
Iris, it must have been the windows.
You mean the windows? No one could climb.
Easy. Look, there's a ladder still there. And it took us some time to open the door.
There is a ladder.
Oh, yes, a very convenient ladder.
But don't you see? It still couldn't have happened.
What do you mean? Someone came through the window, hit Mr. Seaton, and escaped the same way.
But it couldn't have happened that way. Look, the windows are locked. Both of them on the inside. And Harold and I were outside the only door.
The windows are locked?
Yeah, that means Mr. Seaton was alone. Alone in a locked room.
And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Virginia Bruce and Alan Jocelyn with George Zucco in The Locked Room, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
All right, folks, are you all here? There's Miss Iris Lane.
Yes.
Dr. Charles Woodhull.
Yes.
Harold Mills. And Mr. Alex Van Houten.
Yes.
Now let's get down to business. We know some of the facts, but not enough of them. We know that you four were the only people in the house when Mr. Seaton was robbed, outside of the cook, and she was in the kitchen. We know Seaton had the diamond on him when he went into the study, and that someone lifted it before we got here. We haven't located the diamond yet, but we will. Now, this business of the windows being locked, somebody here knows who locked them. One of you hasn't come clean, or all of you.
It's easy to see what you're thinking, Captain Hadley. As we tell it, it looks as though Harold and I did the job. But we didn't, that's all.
That's all. The only door locked and watched before and after. Windows locked before and after. No one hidden in the room before or after. And I don't believe in ghosts, so the thing's impossible. Now, which one of you locked those windows? Mr. Mills?
Well, really, dear me, officer, why would I do the one thing to make it look as if Iris and I had committed this crime?
Yes, you know, Harold got something there. If the windows hadn't been locked, you'd know someone from outside did it.
Look, I'm trying to be patient with you people, but if Mr. Seaton doesn't die, which he hasn't yet, he'll tell us who did it. So I advise you to come clean now. Dr. Woodhull?
Yes, officer?
You and our friend, Mr. Van Houten here, were, as the young lady puts it, outside when it happened. Maybe you managed to lock the windows afterwards.
Yes, how could he? He was too busy helping Mr. Seaton to get anywhere near the windows. And neither did Mr. Van Houten. I'd swear to that.
Well, thank you, dear lady. I did not expect such a kindness.
Pardon, gentlemen.
Well, Barton?
I says to tell you that Seaton's come too. He's talking.
Talking? Mm-hmm. Is he out of his head or does he make sense?
She says you can ask him some questions if you don't tax him too much.
Well, now we'll get someplace. I think one of you had better come with me.
There's the captain, miss.
We'll try not to upset him too much, nurse.
Captain, maybe being a suspect, I shouldn't say anything. But if you don't mind, I don't think it's safe to question him.
Safe for who, Doctor?
Nonsense, Woodall. I want to tell what I can. But, Mr. Seaton, I know your condition. I don't think you should exert...
Shut up, Woodall.
I was in the study. Just sat down at the desk. I was waiting for Dr. Woodall. The chair pushed the door into the office. I heard... Harold and I was talking outside.
Both of them?
Yes. Sound carries pretty well through the door. They were talking some nonsense about if they drew, they had $1 million.
You heard what we said?
Then I think Harold was posing or something.
Oh, dear me, Mr. Seaton, I never realized that you...
Well, I could. I was taking my medicine, and then I think, a footstep behind me. I set my glass down and started to get up.
Did you turn around?
Didn't have time. Something smashed down on my head, and a dog.
Then you didn't know who it was?
No. I don't know how.
What do you mean, how?
Because I had locked the windows or something.
You locked the windows?
Yeah. I saw someone put the ladder up. I suppose it was the gardener or somebody. I wanted to be climbing around, so I locked both windows.
You're sure no one was hidden in the room?
Positive. Captain, I think you've had enough.
Yes, I guess you're right, Doctor. Will you people step outside? I'll be there in a minute.
Come on, Doctor. Harold.
Now, Mr. Seaton, what I want to know is...
Clement, don't make him keep talking.
Oh, poor Mr. Seaton, he does look awfully bad.
No. I suppose it's proper to feel pity for even Francis Seaton.
Look, Mr. Van Houten, you've made several remarks like that. Maybe you've got your reasons, but I don't think it would sound so good to the police.
Oh, believe me, dear lady, my distaste for Mr. Seaton is purely objective.
It's terribly perplexing, isn't it? Now that Mr. Seaton's confirmed us on the locked windows, I can't see how the police are going to prove it.
Look, let's not kid ourselves. We're all supposed to be nice, civilized people, but one of the four of us is a thug. A thug who beat a defenseless man over the head and took that diamond.
But dear me, as I see it, that's just the point. It proves that none of us could have done it.
Well, if Mr. Seaton's story proves that we couldn't, it proves 100 times more that no one else could.
Well, Captain, is there anything more we can do?
Yes. You'll all be searched again for the diamond. And none of you are to leave this house until further notice.
Not leave the house.
What about my practice?
Surely it requires more evidence than you have to hold us over the... supposed disappearance of a diamond. I'm not holding you because of the diamond. I'm holding you on suspicion of murder. Mr. Seaton is dead.
Who's there?
Can I come in, Iris?
Oh, Dr. Woodhall, what do you want?
I'll only be a minute.
Well, all right.
I hate to disturb you, but I'm really worried.
You are?
Iris, why don't you try to get out of here?
Out of here? Why on earth should
don't
I?
Don't you realize you're suspected of murder? You could hide somewhere until this was all being cleaned up.
Are you crazy? Sure, I'm suspected, Doctor, but no more than you. How's it going to look if I suddenly disappear?
Yes, I suppose you're right. If I could only keep you out of this. I'm so worried I don't think straight. You have a cigarette, Iris?
Yes, look in that box on the table. Oh, watch out, there's a lamp cord.
Oh, I'm sorry, that was clumsy of me.
Oh, don't let it worry you, it's no heirloom. What's that?
What? Look.
Where did you get that?
The diamond.
Where did you get it?
It was on the floor.
On the floor?
I just did the police search in here.
How did it get on the floor?
I suppose it must have been in the lamp. Yes. See? This part lifts out. Must have been an oil lamp.
Apparently. May I have it, please?
The diamond?
It was found here.
What do you want to do with it?
I want it.
Iris, it's not safe.
Sure, I know. Give it to me.
Well.
Thanks.
Are you going to give it to Captain Hadley?
Why?
I don't think it would be wise. Not yet.
You're not afraid of something, are you?
Iris, suppose they didn't believe you. Suppose they think that you...
Oh, I'll think about it. Dr. Woodall, will you do me a favor?
Certainly, if I can.
Well, would you meet me here in exactly 10 minutes?
You are coming downstairs.
Oh, sure, but I've got a couple of things to do. I won't be long.
Well, perhaps I should wait.
No, please, you don't have to do that.
But all right, but be careful.
Careful?
I mean, don't let anyone know you have the diamond, because...
No, I know. Yes, because whoever killed Seaton for it would kill me, too. No, it will be soon, tonight. It has to be. What? Yes, I'll do it as hard as I can, but don't slip because I'm counting on you and...
Iris, are you ready?
Oh, yes, Anton. I'm sorry. I'm really stuck for a couple of days, but we'll make it soon. Sure, dinner and a show.
All right, darling. Goodbye.
I didn't mean to barge in.
Oh, that's okay. Let's go downstairs. Where are the others?
You mean Harold and Ben Houghton? I think I heard them when I came up. Yes, they're in the office. Listen.
Come on, let's go in.
For a few days.
Oh, so we wondered if you were coming down, Iris. Why are you startled me?
We're not intruding.
Intruding?
It sounded like you were having a little argument.
Oh, no, it wasn't that exactly. You see, we were talking about, well, dear me, I don't know why I shouldn't tell you, about an engagement ring.
An engagement ring? Harold.
I didn't want you to know I'm buying one from Mr. Van Houten. I don't have quite enough money, and I won't have for a few days.
Mr. Van Houten sells rings.
Well, I thought that was understood. It's my profession. I deal in diamonds in a small way.
Diamonds? To the police?
Is the word diamond so surprising, sir? Naturally, the police would have to know my business with Mr. Seaton.
Yes, I'm sure they would. It's only...
You're hinting that my apparent dislike for the late Mr. Seaton, Doctor. Well, I hated him. He was a cheat and a fraud. He cheated me.
Doesn't sound like Mr. Seaton.
My dear young lady, there are 100 men in Amsterdam who would be glad to know that he suffered. But as you know, such dislike was not the motive for his murder.
Well, really, now, there's no need to be huffy, Mr. Van Houten. Well, dear me, we all know what the motive was. I guess it was motive enough for any one of us.
Yes. Look, let's face it. One of us killed Seaton, that's true, but three of us didn't. And yet we're all suspected. I think if the four of us let down our hair, maybe we can figure this thing out.
I think that sounds very reasonable. If Iris needs advice or help...
Maybe I do with that. I've found the diamond.
You mean you found it? You found,
found it? Found it where?
In my room. Dr. Woodhall accidentally knocked over a lamp. It was inside.
And where is it now?
I brought it with me. Here in my purse.
And the police will not know, huh?
So here I am, stuck with this thing, and I don't know what to do about it.
Oh, dear. Iris, I'm really ashamed. I don't know how to tell you.
Ashamed of what?
Well, I couldn't tell the police. At least I thought I shouldn't. You see, Mr. Seaton told me in confidence. But now that we've agreed to be frank and honest...
What are you driving at?
I don't know why Mr. Seaton was killed. Maybe none of us will ever know that. But it wasn't because of the diamond. I knew that all along. You see, that isn't the real diamond at all.
Preposterous. You expect us to believe that? Miss Lane, let me see that diamond, please.
Sure, you're the expert in the crowd. Take a look. I'll hold on to it, though.
I don't care what Mr. Van Houten says. Mr. Seaton told me it was a replica he brought home. I don't know why.
This is ridiculous. Why would anyone want to plant a false diamond in Iris's room?
What about it, Mr. Van Houten?
It's incredible.
What?
Well, even without my glass, I can see that this is false. There are no planes of cleavage. A very shoddy piece of work.
It's phony? I don't get it. Why was he killed then?
Well, you see how I've been racking my brains. Here, Mr. Van Houten, maybe we'd better put it in the safe.
Oh, right? I might as well keep it. We'll have to give it to the captain anyway.
Yes, I suppose we'd better tell him. Dear me, he'll be terribly distressed, I'm afraid.
No, I hate to admit it, but this is beginning to get me down, Harold. I feel jumpy and sort of sick.
Oh, it's probably my fault. I should have told you.
Oh, not just about the diamond. Everything. The locked windows. The way he looked before he died.
Iris, do you feel bad? You look as if you might...
I'm sorry. I hate to be so silly. I do feel sort of shaking. Maybe if I lie down. Would you help me into the study?
Here, Iris, let me open the door, please, Doctor.
On the couch, Iris?
Yes, please. I'll lie down right here. Oh, Dr. Woodhall, do you have something that I could take for this headache? I feel really sick.
Why, yes, if you think you need it. Is there a glass? I have something here.
Well, here's a glass, Doctor.
This is a mild sedative, Iris. Now a little water.
Here, Doctor, here's the seltzer bottle.
Oh, that'll do it. Now, drink this down, Iris.
Set it right there. I'll drink it. I just want to close my eyes for a minute. And will you switch out the lights when you go out? And maybe you should lock the door.
Yes, of course. We'll call you for dinner. Try to sleep. Poor girl. Here
So you are vague, eh?
Van Houten.
Where's the diamond?
Diamond?
Give it to me. Well?
But you said it was false.
We are not so easily fooled. We know what goes on.
We? Who do you mean?
Never mind. Give me the diamond.
And if I don't?
You know what will happen if you don't. Hey, who's there? What are you doing?
Oh, Van Houten, what is it? What's happened? Who is it? Turn on the lights. Harold.
Well, I seem to have arrived just in time.
Harold, you hit him.
No, he's only knocked out. How are you feeling?
Why, much better.
Oh, you didn't take your medicine.
No, I didn't.
Oh, dear me. I was afraid you were too smart for that. Iris, I think you and I should have a serious talk. You don't mind if I lock the door?
Oh, would it make any difference?
Very little, I admit. Now, Iris, just how much do you know?
About what?
Oh, come. There's no need for you to be reticent. I shall have to kill you in any case.
Oh, but you can't do that.
And who will stop me? Dr. Woodhall? No, Iris. He'll be very busy for a little while. The cook has become quite ill.
You poisoned her.
No, it's nothing much. She'll recover. Tell me just how much do you know?
I know about the seltzer bottle. That's how you knocked out Seaton.
Oh, that's very good. You're so clever. Dear me, if I had more time, I'd be inclined not to kill you, but it's late and I sailed with the Diamond at midnight. I'm signed on as a steward on a freighter bound for Argentina. So you see, it's really time that makes this unpleasantness necessary.
You know, Harold, they'll find me before midnight.
Ah, but they will find with you Mr. Van Houten. Poor Van Houten, he'll be very confused. You know, I actually persuaded him that you and Dr. Woodhall were the culprits. That's why he came here to get the diamond.
And now you're going to frame him with my murder. You're a pretty smart boy, aren't you?
Oh, thank you, my dear. They'll probably suspect me, too, after they find out I've gone. Tell me, how did you guess about the seltzer bottle?
The condemned woman ate a hearty breakfast. Okay, I'll talk. Well, I knew it must have been the seltzer bottle when I realized it was one of those kind you fill yourself with a capsule to make the bubbles. But what did you put in it?
A concoction known as the Mickey Finn. But it felt so much like a blow on the head that even Seaton confirmed my little story.
Well, I knew whoever did it would try the same thing on me to get the diamond. You were the one who got me the seltzer for my medicine tonight. I suppose you saw it coming.
Your little trap? Yes, I'm afraid I did. Dear me, we're just too smart for each other, aren't we?
And you hit Seaton over the head when I was phoning for a doctor just to make it look good, right?
Yes, of course. Oh, I wish Seaton hadn't locked those windows.
Maybe you think I don't.
Well, Iris.
Well?
I really hate to do this, Iris. Oh, Iris, I'll give you a choice.
A choice of what?
I have here a fairly efficient gun, but it's noisy and it's messy, too. I don't like to use it, but if I have to...
What else?
Or you could drink when I put for you in the glass from the seltzer bottle. It would be much easier for you. It's practically tasteless. After you drink it, you won't mind what else is necessary.
What? Well, I suppose...
Yes, that's right. Pick it up. Now, drink it, quickly.
All right. Here goes.
Why, you...
Nice timing, Captain Hadley. The glass wasn't a bad signal.
It was nice timing on your part, Miss Lane, throwing yourself on the floor. You hadn't figured on the gun.
No, I hadn't. Is Van Houten coming around, Doctor?
Yes, he'll be all right.
Okay. Come along, Harold.
Oh, this is such a shame. Iris, before I go, I'd like to tell you how sorry I am.
Sorry?
Yes, about that proposal. Even if it was an alibi, I almost meant it. Dear me, it looks now as though I shall... never married.
Yes. Dear me, it certainly does.
And so closes The Locked Room, starring Virginia Bruce and Alan Jocelyn, with George Zucco. Tonight's tale of suspense.
Mr. Jocelyn appeared by courtesy of 20th Century Fox. Before we tell you about next week's stars and story, Roma Wine, sponsor of these weekly suspense dramas, brings you one of tonight's stars, Miss Virginia Bruce, with a message of real importance. Miss Bruce.
Somewhere the other day, I came across a small news item. It mentioned that the men and women of our armed forces, most of whose pay averages very little more than $50 a month, have subscribed the huge total of $250 million worth of United States war bonds. Ladies and gentlemen, if you need a testimonial to the worth of subscribing to the Fourth War Loan, which is now on, I think this news item supplies it. If the men and women who are fighting this war have that kind of faith in the future of our country, how can we have less? This is the time when our armed forces are making ready for the final extra effort which will bring us victory. They need your extra support from extra purchases of war bonds. For the fourth war loan, one extra $100 war bond, please.
Next Thursday, same time, Roma Wines will bring you two distinguished actresses, Miss Ida Lupino and Miss Agnes Moorhead. Don't forget then, next Thursday, for Ida Lupino and Agnes Moorhead in Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wine, R-O-M-A, made in California for enjoyment throughout the world.
From January of 1944, it's been Suspense and The Locked Room. That's all the time we have today, but join us again next week at the same time and invite a friend to listen. Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. So till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Preceding program copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved.